Welcome to the Not Old Better Show. I'm your host, Paul Vogelsang, and this is episode number 243. As part of our Smithsonian Associates Art of Living interview series, our guest today on the Not Old Better Show is Timothy Mulligan. Timothy Mulligan is an author and a retired archivist at the National Archives who specialized in captured German and related American military records of World War II. Timothy Mulligan, our guest today, will be joining us to talk about the decisive battle of the Second World War, the Battle of Stalingrad. And because music played such a role in promoting propaganda, we're playing the March of the Soviet Tankmen and the March of Stalin's Air Force, both of which are original recordings, and both were played frequently during World War II, so we thought we'd use those as our music today. The Battle of Stalingrad is a fascinating yet tragic subject, and a battle fought mostly for prestige, notably considered history's first battle over oil. But the battle ended with the annihilation of an entire German army of 250,000 men.
It evolves that way, but it started off as something completely different. And what it started off as comes back at the very end in one reason why the disaster for the Germans becomes the way it does, because the commander of the Sixth Army understands the situation in the Caucasus, which was this is all part of a plan to invade the Caucasus and take the oil. And he understands that that had bogged down. And so one reason why he doesn't retreat, one reason why he stays on and fights and even doesn't even surrender when he really should have, is because he's aware of those troops down there having to be able to evacuate and pull out. So even at the end, the doom, the fate of the Sixth Army is affected by what was the original plan. And sometimes we forget about that original plan.
That, of course, is our guest today, author Timothy Mulligan, who will be appearing at the Smithsonian Associates program Thursday, August 9th, 2018, at the Ripley Center in Washington, D.C. Please join me in welcoming to the Not Old Better Show via internet phone, Timothy Mulligan. Tim Mulligan, welcome to the program.
Nice to be here.
Well, it's nice to talk to you, too. I think this program, Stalingrad, Turning Point of World War II, is going to be fascinating for my audience. And I wonder if you'd just tell us briefly about your upcoming presentation at Smithsonian Associates.
Yes, I'll be giving a talk, I believe, on August the 9th at the Smithsonian, where I will be discussing this particular campaign on the Eastern Front. Stalingrad is the turning point of World War II. But above all, talking about it in the context of the Soviet-German War, which was basically the war in Europe. And one of the things I want to emphasize about all of this is the scale of human loss, the scale of human combat, human suffering, that was all involved in this one campaign that more or less dwarfs anything that Americans and British soldiers experienced in the Western Front. And of course, again, Americans and British civilians, although the British civilians were subject to Luftwaffe bombing, but they were never subjected to occupation and physical combat where their cities are ruined while they're in them in the course of fighting. So just to give an idea of the scale, we're talking about Soviet losses in this campaign. At this point, I'm talking from late August through early February 1943. We're talking about approximately, according to Soviet sources now, 420,000 men killed in action or mortally wounded, in addition to about 60,000 who were captured by the Germans. Now, that total of 420,000 Soviet soldiers alone, that's a larger number than the total number of deaths and non-combat deaths of American servicemen throughout the whole of World War II. But the Soviets lose this in 6 months in this sector, while fighting is going on in other sectors as well. So the scale of loss, the scale of human combat and suffering is something that we don't really understand. And that's really the point I want to get across. The scale of this conflict, the scope of the fighting, the number of lives lost, and how this affects conditions today.
That's helpful. Thank you very much, Tim Ogan. So let's talk a little bit about scale. You mentioned the battle really going on for many months, kind of over some winter time. I assume that contributed to the sheer numbers of losses on both sides, and the Germans the Germans had a significant loss, number of casualties too, but only a fraction of what the Soviet Red Army losses. So how is it possible? How did these losses occur?
They occur over an extended period of time. When you consider that the Battle of Stalingrad, and this is one of the other things, one of the real points I want to make about the context, Battle of Stalingrad did not start off as the key objective for the German army. The objective of the German offensive, which begins in late June of 1942, is the Caucasus to the south. The ability of the Soviets to provide their military with oil from the Caucasus is really one of the targets that Hitler's aiming at, to deny the Soviets that oil and obtain that oil for the Germans, because Hitler believes he's in a near critical situation regarding his future fuel supplies. At the same time, he wants to cut the Allied supply line that runs up the Volga River, where American Lend-Lease and British Lend-Lease aid is coming up, actually from Iran, and moving up through that area, and especially through the Volga as a major transportation link. So originally the German plan was to drive into the Caucasus and seize that area, deny it to the Soviets, use it for themselves, with Stalingrad as part of the overall operation, but no more than a part of it. Simply a side development that to protect the German left flank and to deny the Soviet city of Stalingrad as an industrial center, as a transportation center on the Volga, to deny that to the Soviets. But the real objective was always the Caucasus. Well, the problem was the offensive into the Caucasus broke down. It really was beyond the Germans' capability of achieving these goals. And over a period of time, what developed was the Germans began, especially under Hitler's domination and his idea of strategy, to go for both objectives at once. Suddenly, Stalingrad becomes more attractive and necessary to seize as the offensive in the Caucasus breaks down. He keeps shifting weight back and forth. For example, the German 6th Army advances a considerable distance, but then has to stop and wait for fuel because fuel is being diverted to the forces that are advancing into the Caucasus. Then they shift priorities back to 6th Army, and now 6th Army gets to resume the advance. But you have to keep in mind that even before the German 6th Army arrived at the city of Stalingrad on August 23rd, they'd already been fighting and marching for about 2 months. And they'd advanced over a period, a space of over 400 miles, fighting all the way, losing men all the way, using up combat power, vehicles, tanks breaking down, having to be repaired. So the Battle of Stalingrad begins for the Germans at the end of a long advance. And the logistical problems that the Germans experience, because really the 6th Army is fighting at the end of a logistical shoestring, that's going to be the key problem for 6th Army, that it never really has the full combat power necessary to capture the city, which the Soviets defend with such ferocity.
And with oil as the prize, knowing that it was in short supply, was it strategic? Was it just Hitler's miscalculation? Was it ego that let this battle go the other way? Because this was a real disaster for Germany.
Yes, as I say, the battle started, or the campaign started, to seize the oil of the Caucasus. So this is a strategic goal that Hitler understood, and he's not wrong. Mm-hmm. He understands that Germany has a problem with raw resources, that there are no oil fields in Germany. They're dependent largely on oil from Romania, and they're dependent on synthetic fuel oil plants, which eventually American and British bombers will target as a number one priority. But in 1942, he understands that in order to conduct his war, he needs that oil from the Caucasus for his own forces and to deny it to the Soviets. So that begins as a clear economic strategic goal. As that offensive bogs down, as it becomes evident that he's not going to achieve that goal, Hitler begins increasingly to shift priority to the capture of the city of Stalingrad, especially when it's apparent that the Soviets are putting up a tenacious defense. Then it becomes more a personal and a political goal that if he can capture the city with Stalin's name, that the Soviets are obviously putting a major effort into retaining. If he can achieve that, then he achieves a political and psychological goal, which will have to substitute for not being able to capture the Caucasus oil. Even when he begins to retreat, even when the Soviets begin the counteroffensive that is really going to turn the war once and for all, Hitler still retains this idea, maybe I can still get that oil in the Caucasus. When he withdraws his forces from the Caucasus as a result of the defeat at Stalingrad, he still retains a bridgehead in the Kuban Peninsula. And he officially tells all of his generals, well, we can use that bridgehead to launch another attack into the Caucasus, which is, of course, far beyond anything the Germans are capable of doing. This was always Hitler's problem, that he could never understand the limitations of his own country, of his own armed forces. And the fact that he's launching an offensive in June of 1942, when the rest of his forces on the Eastern Front have to maintain a completely stationary position. He has to strip tanks and vehicles from his other units in the northern and central sectors of the Eastern Front and send them to the units in the south in order to launch that offensive in the first place. The German units that marched towards Stalingrad and the Caucasus, they're never at 100% of their authorized strength when the offensive begins. They're only about 85%. So that the German forces are never really capable of achieving what goals Hitler has set for them.
This is just a fascinating subject, Tim Mulligan. We're just drawn into this. It's almost a make or break battle. And we're looking forward to your presentation at Smithsonian Associates titled Stalingrad, Turning Point of World War II. I just have one final question for you, and that's about the leaders of the armies. We know somewhat about the German leaders, and perhaps there's a great deal of information available about them. But the Soviet leaders, I understand that you've found some information. It's limited, but through some of the official memoirs, tell us a little bit about the Soviet leaders that we really barely know about at all.
Yes, one of the fascinating aspects of the story for the Battle of Stalingrad is the Soviet leadership, and we still don't know a great deal about that, simply because of the veil of official secrecy that dominated Soviet historiography. Only approved stories were able to be published. But what we do know is that the key figures, key Soviet leaders involved in the Battle of Stalingrad, of course, there's Georgi Zhukov, who fulfills multiple roles in Soviet leadership during the war. He is the dominant Soviet military figure of World War II, and justifiably so. He starts off the war actually as chief of the general staff, of Stavka, the Soviet high command staff. He changes from that after the initial defeats. He becomes a man who coordinates defense of locations. He will move, he will transition from being a Stavka representative who goes out into the field and coordinates activities to actually leading commands in the field. Then he goes back to Moscow and resorts to planning for operations. At the very end of the war, ironically, he's only in command of basically one army group. And that's an interesting story that we don't know the background to sufficiently. But Zhukov is one general who has always been credited with the great defense of Stalingrad. And there's no question that he played a major role as the representative of the Soviet high command in Stalingrad in August and early September to coordinate the defensive planning, to begin to plan the counteroffensive, which will ultimately trap and destroy the German Sixth Army there. However, more recent documentation that has emerged gives a bit more credit to the Soviet front or army group commander who was there, Andrei Eremenko. That was the Russian spelling and version of his name. He's actually Ukrainian. Today, if you look him up, you'll see more typically the Ukrainian spelling and pronunciation of his last name, which is Yeryomenko. He was the front commander at Stalingrad, and Nikita Khrushchev was his direct political advisor, the man he always had to work closely with in conducting military operations and conducting planning and strategy. It now seems that Eremenko's plan for encircling and destroying the German Sixth Army at Stalingrad was more his operation than Zhukov's. And finally, you have a very colorful figure, Vasily Chuikov, who is the commander of the Russian 62nd Army in Stalingrad for most of the bitter but ultimately decisive city fighting that retains the city for the Soviets in hand-to-hand, street-by-street, house-by-house fighting during the key period of September, October, and early November 1942. Chuikov has left behind a very interesting memoir of that operation and the fighting. He's extremely candid where he says, well, this general was really no good, so he had to go. This unit was really good, really outstanding, but the unit right next to it, they weren't any good. They had to be replaced. That's very unusual in Soviet historiography to see that kind of memoir come out. And again, what's the story behind that memoir? But Chuikov is one of the most important figures, and he gets his due, especially in the early days of May 1945, when he, in command of the same army, which has now been redesignated as the 8th Guards Army, is in Berlin. And on May 2nd, he will take the surrender of the Berlin garrison. Very appropriate that the defender of Stalingrad, who triumphed over the German forces invading his city, takes the surrender of the German forces in the capital city, where there was analogous fighting by the German defenders, but again with very heavy losses for the Soviets and the Germans, but which resulted, of course, in a complete Soviet triumph.
These stories are just wonderful, and we certainly are going to look forward to hearing more from Tim Mulligan at his Smithsonian Associates presentation coming up. The title, of course, is The Battle of Stalingrad, The Turning Point of World War II. Tim Mulligan, thanks so much for joining us today. All of your depth of knowledge and research has been just wonderful to hear and learn from, and we're looking forward to seeing you coming up at Smithsonian.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Special thanks go to the Smithsonian Associates staff for all the help they give us in arranging these wonderful interviews. My thanks to our guests today, and please check out our website at notold-better.com for more information and conversation. And thanks to all of you, my wonderful audience, for your charming, encouraging, and advice-driven emails with show and topic suggestions. Please keep them coming at info@notold-better.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at notoldbetter. And you can find us on Facebook as well. We are Not Old Better there on Facebook. Podcasts of the Not Old Better Show are available on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Also on Amazon's Alexa. How are you today, Alexa?
I'm doing great.
Alexa, play the Not Old Better podcast.
Getting the latest episode of the Not Old Better Show. Here it is from TuneIn.
You can always find us online at notold-better.com, where you can find all of our archives. You can share a link, you can get in touch, and I look forward to hearing from you. I'm Paul Vogelzang, and please, everyone, let's talk about better. The Not Old Better Show. Thanks, everybody.